Welcome to the webinar. My name is Jeff McDonald. Today, Ideas Marketing, we're going to do question and answers. So hopefully you've got some questions ready. I've got a few that people have asked previously, and I've loaded them into the system and got some answers for them. And if you've got some other answers along the way, feel free to type them into the question box on your control panel, which is usually, it's always on the right-hand side of my screen, so maybe that's where it is for you too. Okay, so I'm Jeff McDonald. Some of you may know me as the Ideas Architect. Others may know me as the Book Wrapper. It's still me, the same person. Today we're talking about ideas marketing and how to design, build and sell your idea. And primarily it's a question and answers show. So the whole of the show is going to be about questions and answers. So I've got a few short ones to answer today. So if you've got any questions, feel free to type them into the question box on the right-hand side. And we'll go from there. Okay. So, happy birthday to us. This is my 10th webinar under the Ideas Marketing banner, so I'm quite happy about that, and that's why I thought it was appropriate to try something different today and have an open question. So, have a chance to review some of the sessions we've done previously, and also your chance to ask your questions for what you're not sure of or what you'd like to hear in the future or anything like that as well. So let's fire away. Our most popular question, and I've already had this question once today. Can you speak a little louder? Sorry, folks, had to add at least one joke in there, but I seem to get that one every week. It seems one of the things with the Mac I find with the settings is often I'll go into GoToWebinar and I'll set the voice on my microphone, and for some reason it seems to reset itself, so it goes a bit quieter as well. So that's one to watch out for. Okay. So next question. So why are you doing webinars? Everybody, when I say to people I'm doing webinars, they go, why are you doing that? And I think the best way to answer that is through some of the distinctions we've had in our previous webinar. And one of them was to talk about the ideas marketing curve. And very simply, if you see on the vertical axis, there's dollars, and on the horizontal axis, there's relationship. And the curve basically says you'll make more money from the better quality of your relationships. So as you increase the level of your relationship, the potential to earn money is greater. And some of the distinction that when you work through this, and if you want to go back to our previous webinar on marketing curves, one of the distinctions is that you want to have high-end product offerings, some lower end, and probably some free offerings. And that'll depend on the relationships you have with the people, and they'll follow through ideally from an ascension curve model. So ideally, most of your clients will come from a free or potentially a lower end before they step into your higher end premium products. And similarly, there's a relationship between virtual products or products as we know them, physical products like a book, and a group situation where you turn up but you're giving the same message to the group, and then your premium one is typically you in person. So the relationship between free, low, high, virtual, group and personal suggests this is my business model. So that doing webinars is a virtual way to offer and talk about things as a group, but doing them online. Whereas then the next level up is to come to a paid workshop or to book me one-on-one to consult with you or to coach you around your business. So that's the reason I'm doing webinars, because they give me a chance to provide a free product or a free service for people to promote what I'm doing, but also to build that lower rung of the relationship. Next question. So what equipment services are you using for your webinars? As soon as I say I'm doing webinars, this is the question that usually follows. The first question usually is what platform you're using. At the moment, GoToWebinar seems to be the standard platform. I'm not really sure it's going to last for too much longer. I think my understanding and take in the marketplace from talking to people is there's a whole lot of interest in webinars at the moment, and there's a whole bunch of people coming into the market to provide services there. I've heard rumours that the Adobe platform is pretty good. And at the moment, I'd also say where webinars are at, that mostly we're doing slides, so you can see that there's basically just slides on the show, but we're probably going to move into full video and slides in the not too distant future. I'm aware that some of that's already available, but generally it's at a higher end and probably needs a bit more bandwidth to work. But certainly over the next couple of years, I certainly expect that you'll be able to see me sitting here in my I'm not in my pajamas today, but t-shirt and shorts sort of thing, not quite that warm in Melbourne either. But you'll be able to see me as well as the slides. So currently using GoToWebinar. Okay, got a question there from Jenny. I'll get to that one. I've got that on the list there, Jenny, so thanks for that question. The next part of what I'm using around my webinars is I certainly think you need some sort of USB microphone. I'm using a Samson brand. It's basically a USB mic you can plug into your back, and as long as you speak reasonably close to it, you get a good message from that. I'm also using a digital recorder, so I record via the computer, but I also just record it from a second unit, and the brand of the one I'm using is a Roland Etterill, originally used for the music industry, and now it's about the size of probably the size of a cassette tape, really. So it's a nice pocket size recorder that I use as a backup in case the computer recording doesn't work. And then also, at the moment, I'm experimenting with Camtasia, finding it quite easy to actually do the recordings. I've only messed this up once so far, but otherwise it's been easy. It's a little bit slow with my processing speed on my laptop to convert the videos into MP4s. But currently using Camtasia. Had recommendations for ScreenFlow, but I've found that ScreenFlow is a little bit more complex, and certainly the how-to-use videos are not as good as Camtasia. So if you're looking for a quick start, I'd suggest Camtasia. If you're looking for deeper features and more choices about what you do when you use the video recording, you might want to look at ScreenFlow, and I believe they're both available for the Mac and the PC. And then the golden rule, or what I think I've learnt from my 10 webinars, is I think you need to practice and then you need to build some system around what you're doing. So now that I've done a few, in the start I started with Andrew O'Brien, who's one person on the call, and a couple of other people, and we just practiced a few webinars to see what it looked like and sounded like to get it right. And then I've started to build some systems around how I do this, and that includes some of the promotional systems, so that I do this, I do this, I do this. Then I have a checklist for when I'm doing the webinar to make sure I cover most of the basics. And then I have a system out the back where I'm cutting up and slicing the audio and the video and those sort of things. So I think they're the two keys that I'd say if you're going to start webinars. Get some practice in before you start, and then try to build it into a system so you can cover most of the things most of the time. And for example, I generally use one template of slides and then save it as a new file, delete the old slides and put the new slides in. So that sort of level of system where you can repeat a lot of things. One thing that's very good about, or seems to be from my perspective around GoToWebinar, it's good on the registration piece. So if you can get people to your registration page, the actual process of registering is pretty good, although it can be a bit slow logging in, and I've had a few problems myself, and others have said the same thing. Sometimes it's a bit hard to get onto the show, but I think that's just where the technology's at right now. Okay, Camtasia has some great editing functions, example tables of contents. Thanks, Andrew O'Brien, for that one. And again, I think the thing is, that's part of that practice thing. You just got to go and try a couple of systems, see what worked for you, and hopefully make some good choices around that. The other one is I've been fortunate to having a group of good colleagues around me who have been able to advise me with what they're doing with webinars. I also highly recommend Gihan Pereira's book, Webinar Smarts. That was invaluable in getting my head around how to set up the system and also what to expect online. The other comment I'd say around that is the expectation from the number of registrations you get to how many people actually turn up on your webinars. I think when we have a workshop and we have 10 people book, we expect 10 people to come. Maybe one might not come. And on a webinar, the number seems to be closer to 30 to 50%. So if you've got 10 people who have signed up for your webinar, there's a good chance only 3 or 5 of those will turn up. I must be doing reasonably well. because I'm getting probably 50 to 70% of the people that registered do turn up for my webinars. So that's slightly higher than most, but certainly I'd be aiming, I wouldn't be expecting any more than 50% on your webinars. Okay, so here's a question that came out of our webinar on, which one was it? It was on the marketing curve, that's right. So I'll just tell you what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go through the questions that I've got fairly quickly, and then we'll throw it open to the questions that are on the call. So we'll answer this one first. So how do I choose my price points? So the simple idea of the ideas marketing curve is that when you have the relationship and the dollars lined up, you get these horizontal price points. And I think the crucial thing, I think there's three things to consider around price points, and there's some people on this webinar that might want to give some feedback around this as well. I think you've got to start with what's your premium offer, because that's really, if that's what your ascension model, which that curve's all about, is driving your customers to your premium offer, then it's got to be relative to your premium offer. So if your premium offer is $100,000 for a three-month long-term program, or if it's $1,000 for your workshop, or it's $300 for your workshop, then that's going to determine the price point of your other items. The second point I'd say is there a market price for your product or service that you're offering? So, for example, books are a fairly reliable, consistent sort of product that there's a fairly narrow band of prices on that. So typically a book might be $20 to $40 or maybe $50, and there's a few that are outside that range, but not many. Whereas in a consulting market in particular, particularly if you're known as the expert, you might have a premium price on something where you charge, might be $5,000 for a one-day seminar. Or if you're at the other end of the market, you might be charging, I'm charging $450 for a day for the Ideas Marketing Workshop. And I do know of workshops out there that are around $100 for the day. So it depends what your intent is around your product. For example, you may run a very cheap workshop at, say, $75 as a seminar to promote or be a loss leader for other things. So there's a whole bunch of things around pricing that maybe we can talk about in a future webinar. But certainly, what's your premium offer? Is there a market price for it? And then the third one, what's the price flow? So what I mean by that is, where do you flow on your curve? So if you're right down at the bottom here somewhere, you don't want to jump from free to $10,000. It's more likely you might go free and then $10,000 can sit up there and you need something in between. So it depends on the flow between the products and services that you're offering. Next question, how do I decide what to give away and what to charge for? So when we went back to the curve, I suggested that you probably need some free things at the bottom. This could be your blogging and your podcast or maybe even a webinar. And basically, we're going to look at that in our next webinar. I think this is probably one of the best resources on that topic. So as part of a book wrapper review, we're going to look at next week, what's free, what's fee. Next question, if my ideas are about making money, do I need a manifesto? So Jenny Vickers has asked this one, as well as a few other people. Another way of saying that is, does a manifesto work even for a business-focused idea? I am not planning to save the world. My opinion is yes, and I think it comes back to this model here. So this we spoke about in, I think, about our third webinar on the three essentials of business. And pretty much we were looking at the idea of capital in a business. And capital is any resource you use to create greater wealth. So, for example, if you had money in the bank, you would earn some interest typically on that money. So that's a form of that money being capital sitting in the bank, and you're rewarded by the bank people giving you some extra money. And what I'm suggesting is, I think today's business actually needs to have three types of capital and not just one. Most businesses start with money as the goal, and while some people are motivated by money directly, most of us are not. And when I say most of us, the figures I've read are about 90% of people. So therefore, you've got to have, capital, or at least a program that inspires people in other areas. So some people are more motivated by building intellectual capital, ideas capital, and some people are interested in building social capital or their relationships with other people. And I think the ideal business today needs a campaign across all three of these domains. So do you need a manifesto? I think if you've got a manifesto, the key there is that you're able to unite these three areas, and that's where your manifesto becomes the statement, or it's similar to a mission statement, but I think a bit more three-dimensional or a bit more valuable than just a singular statement or a set of statements. So the manifesto in the first part of this is pretty much here's our intent, and this idea of the campaign across these three types of capital allows you to translate your intent of your manifesto into a project or a campaign or a mission that you might pursue in your business. So that's where I'd connect the manifesto. That's not necessarily about changing the world. You might have a goal to make $100,000. You might have an idea simply to publish a book. You may not have an idea to save the world. It might simply be to publish a book. And in the same way, you're already going to have people in your business, but you may want to build a community around it rather than just having them as mere customers or employees. So hopefully that answers that question for you, Jenny. What else have we got here? Cool. And here's a book that I've read recently, which is probably one of the best books that I've read for a while, because I think it just nails something that fitted for me. And it's, if you look at the subtitle there, Why Are Our Goals Best Achieved Indirectly? And John Kay's a fairly respected economist at the London School of Economics, and he's pretty much saying that the studies of his that he's made around corporations is when they've focused on only making money, they haven't been as successful as companies that have been focused on something else. So, for example, Nordstrom in the US have had a really good reputation about focusing on customer service, and John Kay would argue that Nordstrom have been very successful from a financial point of view because they've not focused on the dollars, but they've focused on the customer. And you could say the same about Apple. Apple are one of the most successful companies in the world at the moment, and primarily they're focused on innovation. So that's how they're achieving their goal of finance. So if you're looking at a different spin on traditional goal setting, that could be a good book for you. Okay. Next one's, where do you put subscription versus one-off payments on the marketing curve? So this came from Tim Graham, and a couple of other people have made some similar comments. And it comes down to this. If you're just having a one-off payment versus the lifetime value of the customer. And I've mapped it onto the relationship this way. So it sort of says that the once-only offer might be the $20 per month that someone pays for your subscription service, but the lifetime value of that customer, or even the value over a year, could be $200, say. So what I'm suggesting the answer to this one is really, today's the only day that you've got to make the sale. So I would be focusing on the sale that you're making here, which is really the once-only sale. That's the sale you're making to people. And so whilst your premium customer may be one that comes back repeatedly, you want to tap into the once-only customer because that's really the only opportunity you've got, and that's what the relationships curve is saying. Sell them what's available today. Don't try to sell them the future just yet. By all means, get them in the door, and it's maybe that's the adage. Once you get in the door, then you can expand the offer, prove your value, and they're more likely to come on from a lifetime perspective. The other angle I'd put on this is from a tactics point of view. The tactics you get for producing or attracting a first-time customer is very different from the tactics you would have for a customer that's already with you. So for example, getting the customer for the first time means that you've got to overcome certain things around getting money paid, getting the service delivered, and giving them an experience of the service. Whereas once they're involved with you as a customer and they've already committed dollars to you, the relationship is different, and therefore you want to be offering different things. My major bugbear around this is that I have a credit card with one of the banks, and of course they're continually sending out new information to me as if I'm a first-time customer, saying if I sign up with them I'll get X, Y, and Z, which is a way better deal than I get as a recurring customer. And I think that's really poor marketing because they haven't really split their list and they're not treating me as a loyal customer. They're treating me, well, actually they're treating me worse than a loyal customer because they're giving someone else a better offer than what I'm getting. So I'd certainly be encouraging you not to fall into that trap. So remember, today's the only day, so today's the sale that you're going to make, not necessarily the one for the future. And that probably shows it today there. So where I've suggested, focus on the sale you're going to get today. And a parallel question that's also been asked by Tim, at what point does this curve break down? At what point does the relationship or the model between dollars and relationship break down? And I think that the simple answer I'll give on that is that I think all models break down when we start getting them to show things they're not designed to show. And I think the example here would be if you're trying to show multiple payments on something that's showing. So I think what this curve's about is having customers try certain products for the first time. It's not about the repeat customer. And I think that's where if you start laying over repeat customer, being the recurring subscription onto this, you'll start to change the emphasis of the model. So I think all models break down when we start showing too much information on them or information that's not suited to that type of modelling. So if you've got some questions here, feel free to put them in. So how to attract more people to webinars, okay? Trevor's battery's dropping. I'm sorry, I can't help that one. So I've got a couple here. I'll just answer first and then I'll come to that, Norman. So good question. Can you be known for more than one idea? This one's come up a few times from different people and I've got I've got an interesting spin on this one. So I want to use an example of Seth Godin here. So if Seth Godin produces one book, and this was one of his first books, Unleashing the Idea Virus, then Seth is known for, and that book is one idea that he has. So it's 100% of the attention around Seth Godin and his book. However, if Seth produces two books, then he's effectively split the attention on his books. So his first book is probably only 50% of your attention, and his second book, which Purple Cow is probably his fifth or seventh book, a later book, also gets 50% of the market. And then if he introduces a third book, you could probably say that he split his attention three times. So now he's trying to be known for three different ideas. But I think there's a flaw in this sort of logic, and here's what I think it is. I think the first book definitely gets 100% of the attention because that's all that he's got as his core idea. But when he introduces another book, yes, that book might only get half the attention, but hopefully you can see that the level of attention that happens overall increases. So by the time he produces a third book, he's now got three books competing for attention, but in a much bigger pie. And I think this graphic probably shows it. What ultimately happened is that when you've only got one idea, that idea is synonymous with you. But if you can build ideas over time, then you can actually have a bigger influence. So what we need is a bigger Seth head, which is what we've got here. So to go back to the question, can you be known for more than one idea? The answer is absolutely. But I think it's a danger to try to have more than one or potentially too many ideas going at once. You want to build them at here's the big idea right now in the way that you would releasing a book. And then maybe later you release another book or another seminar or another idea. But don't try to have 10 ideas at once. I think you diminish your market and your attention levels at that. But you can build them up over time. Next question. I like your slides. How can I do that for myself? So often I get that comment about my webinar. So thank you for that. I appreciate that. And I've got a couple of clues for you about how you can do this for yourself. So I think there's a gorgeous picture of Albert. He looks almost sleepy, but he's got a nice, contented smile on his face. And I think the answer is to keep it simple. Keep it as simple as possible and no simpler. And that's pretty much, you can see on this slide, there's not a lot of information there. It's a very simple, clear slide. And I think here's one of the golden rules. If you're reading this, it means you're not listening to me. And I think that's the great problem for the old tradition of PowerPoint, where if someone's reading their slides, they tend to put too many words on them. And pretty much, I think you can expect your audience, if they really are reading something, it means they're not tuned into what you're saying. So you want to choose. Do you want your audience to read, or do you want them to listen? I think from a design point of view, this is one of the secrets, and I think this is the consistency and the brand that I get around my slides, is that there's only a couple of colours here. I'm really only using those three colours there. And I think one of the mistakes is we try to use too many different colours and it distracts. You may use a different colour too. So you may remember the slide I showed of gold earlier where I did use a different colour, but again, that's the only slide in all of these today that's on a different colour. So you can highlight something like that, but when you do too many highlights, you finish up with no highlights. So better to keep it down to one, two or three colours. You'll also notice that that is the font I use, so Myriad Pro is the name of the font, and I'll use that 99% of the time. It's almost on every single slide, and I don't introduce other fonts to it. So that's one of my basic rules. Pick a font that you like, that's clear and suits your brand and your image and all that sort of stuff, and stick to it. Don't go changing fonts around. It just distracts people, unless you're going to use them like I did with that gold example, and you use them as a special one-off highlight. And then the other piece I'd say is you want to have a hierarchy of templates. So you might notice in this slide there's really only two types of slides. There's really the white slide or there's the blue background slide, and then that just gives me that change of colour in terms of the font or the text that I use on it. And that way you can hierarchy your slides. So whenever I'm doing a blue background slide, that's like a change in chapter, and then alternatively when I've got the white background, that's the normal slide. So you're sort of trying to indicate to people where we're at the program. So if a big blue slide comes up, it's more dominant, there's less of them, and they're more noticeable. So you go, oh, that's a change in something. Whereas consistently, they're the blue. And that way you're educating and teaching your audience what's coming and how important the piece of information is. But also, they can relax more because there's some consistency and they're not startled all the time about what's going to come. The thought when I answered that question was maybe I should be doing a webinar on this, so how to make your presentation sexy. So if you're interested in that, just put a note into the question box there and say yes or something like that, or you can type the word sexy in if that appeals to you. But that'll be definitely a topic I would like to do as well for a future webinar. So let us know if you're interested in that. And I love that car. Okay, the final question that I'm going to ask you before I do open up to a couple that have been answered is, what's the next webinar going to be? And I pretty much said that it's free or fee based on Chris Anderson's book called Free. So before I go what's next, I'm going to answer some of your questions here. And Norman has asked a good one, which is certainly a big one for me, which is how to attract more people to webinars. So if you've got some comments you want to add to this, so if you've got a couple of answers for this, you might want to add that in as well. I'm just going to check these answers. Yes, or something like that. Okay, cool. I've also got a couple of comments just on that the presentation one from Andrew. Also, the easy-to-use tools for creating graphics. Yeah, I think that's one of the advantages, certainly I find around the Mac. It's very easy just to line up text and make them central and create very simple, I've been called they're almost like cartoon-like graphics. They don't have a lot of detail in them. And you'll also probably notice that the graphics that I do use, I tend to pick consistent or similar type images. So I'm not using textured ones all the way through. I'm generally just using very simple images that generally I just do a Google search for, and then I try to find ones without a background on it, because often I find if there's a foreground and a background, that's extra information you just don't need. So the classic Apple style where there's the image and it's just sitting in a white field works well for me to sit on a white slide. Okay, so Norman's question was where are we? How to attract more people to webinars? Well, to be honest, I think I've had mixed results on this. Some days I've had some good audiences, and some days I've had some lower audiences. So today is one of the lower audiences. So my thought on today is that the topic is crucial. So the first thing I'd say today, It's a bit of a non-topic, if you like, when you're just doing question and answers. So first thing, you want to get a really clear topic that appeals to your audience. So that'd be the first thing I'd say. Then I think it's about, depending on what your business model, but certainly for me, I've committed to doing webinars for pretty much 12 months. And my primary reason for doing webinars is to build my content. So having the audience grow at the same time is almost like feedback for my content, but also not super critical because I just want to build the content. However, that avoids the question. And I think one of the things you want to put in play over a period of time is get really clear what does your audience want to know about. And part of doing a question and answer was as a way of getting some feedback. And I think there's a couple of things to do over time to build webinars, and it's certainly the marketing curve is one way of explaining it, where you want to build up an audience base from other places. So, for example, I could directly advertise or promote the webinars online, which I do. So I use Thought Leader Central. I send it out to my own mailing list. I put it up on LinkedIn. I tweet about it. I put it up on Facebook. So there's some ways to directly promote a webinar, and different people have come from different places. I'm aware that I've had people from overseas come, which have mostly been through my book wrapper list, but then other people that I've spoken about with manifestos are generally more local. So certainly you want to have your online avenues to attract people. You want to be building your own list directly for your webinars, but also you want to have things in play that are building lists from your website, and also particularly if you're doing speaking engagements. So part of it is you want to be when you're in conversation with people, you want to be telling them that you're doing webinars, and particularly when a particular question comes up. So attracting more people to webinars, I think the best way to do that is if you go online, because to some extent your audience is already online. So I'd be looking at your online channels of how you're attracting people. I'd have your own sources of community. But I'd also look at, and one I haven't explored just yet, is joint ventures. And that could be as simple as if you do a webinar and have someone else on the webinar. So, for example, if I interviewed Gary Vaynerchuk or someone well-known in the online space, then I would expect that person to be promoting my webinars to their list as well. So I think that's a really good way, simple way to share your audience with someone else's, and hopefully you both get a bit bigger audience from that. So I think there's promotional things. I think there's also the one that I realized I wasn't doing well out of my webinars was I was doing a lot of front-end promotion, but not the back-end promotion. And what I mean by that is once I've made the recordings and I've got the webinars, I've put up the audio on my own site, but I haven't put it up on the iTunes site. So I could use that as a back-end promotion so that my past entries or my past creations of my webinars then become promotional devices for my next one. So start to look at that full cycle of attracting people to your webinar. So what are the different ways they come to you? And I think the ideas ladder is one way of doing that. How can you set up joint partnerships with people to share your webinars so that you can both promote to each other's list there? And also then how can you use the content from your webinar to then attract people via previous recordings or previous events to get them into your next one? And the other one is keep experimenting with the topics that you're doing, because obviously in an advertising situation, the headline is one of the crucial pieces. So keep working on your headlines to see what attracts people and what doesn't. Sometimes it can be as simple as, I'm just not interested. The other one is to play with different time zones. So depending on who your audience is, doing them in the middle of the day, Australian time, pretty much captures an Australian audience, although it is about 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock in the US at the moment, which is not prime time for them, but we'll still, I've got a couple of people watching from the US. So hopefully that answers some of that for you. Probably a bit of a ramble there, Norman. Let's see what else we got here. Call yourself Gihan. Change my name to Gihan. Gihan Prahera. I think the other way to learn about how to do webinars well is to be on other people's webinars and notice as you go through their process, what works for you. Does the headline attract you? Does the person's reputation attract you? And then in the process of being on the webinar, have a look at the things that they do either to encourage you onto the next one or look at that. So always use other people's or your experience with other people doing something similar to learn how you could be doing it better as well. How do you address the problem of people who have never attended a webinar before? So this one's from Jenny. Thanks, Jenny, for the question. That's an interesting one because it's like trying to sell a fridge to somebody who doesn't have electricity. I think there's a point where you certainly need... You could easily put up an explanation of a webinar. So, for example, if you did a search on YouTube, there'll be a bunch of things on under the topic, what is a webinar? And you could actually direct people to that as part of your mail out. So if your audience is, particularly in a corporate setting, may not even know what a webinar is, one of my best mates who's well-versed in a whole bunch of stuff, he didn't know what webinars were. So this might be more of a problem than we think. And I think the simple way is you want to be teaching people about what the technology is and how to use it. So I'd say if you're inviting people to that, you might consider putting a link to a video on YouTube that tells people what a webinar actually is. And also if there's other things, you might be able to teach them of what it's like or even have a day where you actually run an event if you've got, say, a corporate client that you might sit down and actually do a demonstration for them. So that'd be my two tips there. Should you declare how many people are online with you? This one's a bit mixed. I reckon if you've got what you consider to be a low number, then you probably don't want to be shouting that up and down. But you also might want to share that from the point of view that it's a more intimate setting. So it depends on the type of webinar you're doing. If you want to do a more open mic one, a more interactive one, you might proudly say that there's only, or it might even limit it to 10 people or maybe even 20 people or 5 people or whatever the number is. Otherwise, if you've got thousands, you might want to brag about that, but I'm not sure that you need to if you've already got the thousands there. So I think that comes down to a personal choice on that one. Also got a couple of questions. We've got about 3 minutes to go, so I'll just run through the rest of the slides here to wrap up. If you've got any more questions, feel free to shoot them through. You can either ask them on Twitter at Ideas Marketing. You can go to our Facebook page, Ideas Marketing, or you can send me an email directly at jeff@ideasmarketing.com.au. So a couple of things for next. Our next webinar, free or fee, that's next Wednesday, September 29, my mum's birthday, so I'll definitely remember that. Okay, and the workshop. So October 14 in Melbourne, how to design, build and sell your ideas. So pretty much that workshop takes the core ideas that we've been talking about in these webinars and puts them into an overall map for you to go, here's the steps and sequences of how I can build, design and ultimately sell your idea. And normally the price is $450. Today in particular is a special day because it's the last day for our early bird. So if you want to get that rather juicy discount and attend the workshop for only $270, you'll need to jump on the webpage and sign up by the end of today. I think that's 12 midnight tonight. So $270 sounds a hell of a lot cheaper than $450. Either way, there's thousands of dollars of value here, and hopefully we can set you on the path to making and fulfilling your idea. So if you want more information, ideasmarketing.com.au/workshops. Also, if you want more on our webinars, that's the address there on our website. You can also have my email address there. More questions, so feel free to keep the questions coming. Not only am I going to use them for future webinars, but we will also continue to do some of these question answer ones so that we can put them up as content on blogs and events and podcasts and things like that as well. So keep the questions coming. If I can't answer them, I'll see if I can find someone who can. And final thought for today, I thought we'd go back to that beautiful smiling face of Albert. And I think this is a useful quote for where we're at today. And hopefully you're reading that instead of listening to me right now. And I'll read it out in my best radio voice. Any intelligent fool can make things bigger and more complex. It takes a touch of genius and a lot of courage to move in the opposite direction. And that's where I'd encourage you to go to, folks. Keep it simple, because I think that's the best way to share your message and ideally attract more work and spread your idea. So that's us done for today. Hope you can join us either on our next webinar next week or even at our workshop in a couple of weeks. We're done for today, so thanks for joining us, and we'll talk soon. Bye for now.